Hello, everybody. My name is Philip Waters. I am an extremely grateful member of Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Altine. And I am so grateful to be here. You have absolutely no idea. Like most of you, I'm sure, we've had to do Zoom meetings for the past year, and it sucks really bad. So to be with you here today, I mean, we could just sit around the couches up there all weekend, and that'd been okay with me, you know. And so I'm really grateful to be here. I want to tell you that being able to talk to you this morning is really an opportunity for me to make amends to you. Because the last time I spoke up here, I think it was about 2005 or 6, I was a fake and a charlatan. And I had no business speaking. So to be able to speak to you this morning and try to, in some small way, make amends for that talk, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate it. You know, Nancy asked me if I got nervous, and you know, I used to not get nervous, but I'm nervous today, and the reason is because for the first time, I think I'm going to make an honest talk. Because I've not always been honest. So to be able to stand before you this morning and know that I'm going to be honest, now you may not like it, but it's going to make me feel infinitely better. You know, I have great memories of being here. You know, Bo and I, we taped this thing for years. Me and Bo and Harvey, we'd come up here and tape this thing, and I have a lot of good memories from being up here. You know, heard a lot of good speakers up here. So to be able to stand here is like my brother-in-law said, it's cosmic. So, you know, my life has been, you know, I was listening to a speaker on the way up here, and she was talking about how good her life had been. And my life was really good growing up. And I was raised by parents who loved me and took care of me, and they gave me everything I needed and a lot of what I wanted. And they taught me some core principles to base my life on. And at some point, I veered to the left, and I lost all of that. Now, I eventually married an alcoholic, and I don't have to tell you what happened. Because though my feelings and your feelings, as we walk through this disease that we call alcoholism, I'm sure are the same. Now, our circumstances may be different. What we experienced may be different, but I can guarantee you, without even talking to you, that our feelings were exactly the same. And I came to the place where I was beat. I was beat. You know, I'd been married to an alcoholic for about 7 years. She left me. And at that time, all I had in my life was wrapped up in an alcoholic home. Some kids and an alcoholic wife in a house full of holes and broken windows, broken hearts and broken dreams, really. Sounds stupid for me to say that. But anyway, that's what it was. My whole life was just absolutely a shambles. And it was through a treatment facility. And I'm going to share something with you that I don't know that I would normally share, but it plays a big part in what got me here today. My wife at the time, we had actually divorced, and she went through a treatment facility. She went to a treatment facility. She was there about a week. She went in the front door, went downstairs, went out the back door, kept drinking. But it was during that time that I was introduced to something called the Affected Family Member Program. Now, I didn't know what that was. I just knew that that I'd been affected by something and it might be a good idea for me to go. So I went. And the long and short of it is that I was put in a group with 10 women, me and a facilitator. And the women were terrified of me. About halfway through, the facilitator took me outside and was going to kick me out because my anger and my whole demeanor instilled a tremendous amount of fear in these women. But thank you, God, that He allowed me to stay. Because it was through that I learned of this program we call the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. Now, I lived in a place called Hueytown, Alabama, and it was not very far from a meeting that I could have just about walked to, but I didn't go to that meeting. And I'm not sure exactly how I found it, but there was a meeting in Bessemer, and that's where I went. And I walked in that room one Wednesday night, and there were seven or eight people there, none of whom I had anything in common with. You know, there was a potato chip salesman and an older black lady, a younger girl. She looked like a girl to me. And a fellow that was a parts man at a Chevrolet dealership. And I said to myself, I don't know if this is going to work. I mean, I don't have anything in common with these people, nothing. Well, I was there, so I stayed. And there was something that happened, and I can't explain to you what it was because I don't even know what they said at that meeting. I just know that an hour later I felt better. I couldn't explain to you why. I just knew that I did. So, now by the time I got to the car, I was as pissed off as I was when I got there. But I knew I wanted to come back. So the next Wednesday, I went back. And that's what I did. I just kept coming back. Because, you see, I'd done everything I knew to do. I'd been to outpatient treatment. I'd been locked up in a psychiatric ward. I had gone to church. I paid a counselor $105 an hour to talk about my ex-wife. And none of it worked. None of it. So I had tried everything that I knew to do. And as far as I was concerned, this was the end of the road for me. So I just kept coming. And you know, it was a meeting that, unfortunately, today, I don't know how many of these type meetings that we have, but that meeting believed in some core principles. They believed in sponsorship. They believed in working the steps. They believed in service. They believed in suiting up and showing up. They believed in coming early and staying late. And it was instilled in me. It was just something that I did because that's what I was taught to do. Well, maybe a month or two, not long, after I'd been going, they had a meeting on the ninth step on a Wednesday night. Well, I'm not doing a ninth step. I mean, I'm just not doing it. I'll play around with some of these other steps. When it come to a ninth step, I wasn't doing it. See, because I'm a wife beater. That's what I am. A yeller and a screamer and a plate thrower. You know, I had a tremendous amount of shame and guilt for my behavior. And yet I couldn't stop. I couldn't keep myself. When it got triggered, it was all over. And I didn't know how to get past that. So I wasn't going to do a ninth step. But there was a guy there, and he says, well, you know, the key to a good ninth step is a good eighth step. If you do a good eighth step, ninth step not going to be no problem. He said, now, the key to a good eighth step is a good seventh step. So if you do a good seventh and eighth step, when you get to step nine, you ain't going to have no problem. And his point, of course, was that there were 8 other steps before I ever got to step 9. Now, like I said, they believed in sponsorship. Now, I didn't know that I was asking him to be my sponsor. Because there are a lot of things that they said that I wasn't able to hear. But after that meeting, I went up to Bo, and I said, Bo, I gotta either quit coming to this meeting or I gotta work these steps. And I don't want to quit coming. And he asked me the single most important question ever been asked. Well, quite frankly, it was the second most important question. But at any rate, he asked me an extremely important question. He said, are you willing? I said, yes, sir, I am. I'll do whatever it is you want me to do. Now, I didn't know Bo. Didn't know anything about him. Didn't know, I mean, you know, you could go I believe you could get off a plane in Siberia, and if you ask several people, eventually you're going to find somebody that knows Bo. I mean, everybody knows Bo. But I didn't know who he was. I didn't know what he was capable of. I didn't know his background. I didn't know him. I just knew that I was one miserable human being and that I needed some help. And he was willing to help me. And so I asked him, and he said yes. And he took me to his office on Tuesday afternoons, and he took me into the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God that he took me into the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it was there that I began to understand this disease called alcoholism. Not only how it affected the alcoholic, what happens to the alcoholic when they take that first drink of alcohol. See, because you're not going to find that in our literature. You know, they talk around it, but they don't really explain the disease of alcoholism. So he took me in that book and he explained to me the disease of alcoholism. But more importantly, he explained to me how I fit into this disease. And we worked those steps, and I will tell you that my life changed. My life changed. Now, my circumstances didn't change. Quite honestly, in terms of my circumstances and, for lack of a better word, having a peaceful life, that didn't happen to me for many, many, many years. I lived most of my life in turmoil. Most of it self-inflicted. Some of it due to the person I was married to at a time. Now, I get married a lot. But my life changed. I mean, my life changed. And let me tell you what Bo Templin did for me. He put me in the car, and we rode all over this country. The first convention that I went to was in Louisville, Kentucky. I'd never been to anything like that. He wanted to know if I would go, and I went. And I'll tell you, I loved it. I mean, I loved it. Again, I don't know what they said. I don't know who spoke. I don't know what they said. I don't know. But I got to ride in the car with my sponsor all the way up there, eat 3 meals a day with him, you know, sleep in the same room with him, drive all the way back with him with my sponsor. And we did that over and over again. Bo Templin didn't tell me what to do. He showed me how to do it. And I grew a lot, particularly the first 3 years. After about 3 years, I met a girl. I didn't meet her, I re-met her. I'd known her since I was in grade school. And the long and short of it is that we got married. And I had 4 kids, she had 3 kids. One of her kids had a baby. There was a heroin addict, an alcoholic, a lunatic, and four very poorly parented boys, all living in the same house, and it was absolute chaos. And I was doing everything that I knew to do. Everything that I knew to do, I was doing it. I went to meetings. I went to three or four meetings a week, okay, at least. I sponsored people. You know, I went all over the country taping, you know, with the taping company. When I was doing it, like I said, I was doing everything that I knew to do. You know, but one of the things that I didn't do was be there for my family. And as much as I love Al-Anon and as much as I love this program, my priorities were screwed up. And I neglected my family. And I don't know if this is why she left me, but she left me on Christmas Day one day. And we were separated for about 6 months. And we got back together for about 6 months. And during that second six-month period is when we came up here. And I spoke that time. And, I've been trying to figure out a way to explain how I felt. What I want to say was that I felt really good. And I did feel good emotionally. I felt good. I talked myself into being in a really good place because I had my family back together. My wife was back together. She came up here with me. And I was speaking. Everybody could see what I was doing. I was back on top. I was Mr. Al-Anon again. What a lie. And it wasn't long after that we split up. Well, it was the next Christmas we split up again, and we stayed split up. Now, I'm going to tell you something. That tore me to pieces. Those of you that knew me during that time, you know what I looked like, at least. But I could tell you, I was utterly devastated. I really honestly didn't know what I was going to do. I really didn't. I had all my priorities wrong. Completely wrong. And there was something inside of me, quite frankly, that said to hell with it. Now, I didn't say that out loud, and I don't know that I consciously thought that, but there was a piece of me that just said to hell with it. I've been doing everything I knew to do. You know, God, I was sponsoring people. People were coming to me and asking me things like I knew. You know, I had a sponsor. And I was in service. You know, I started going to area assembly probably the first 6 months I was in this program. And I've been in this program nearly 28 years. And I count just about on one hand, I've missed an area assembly. But guess what? Going to area assembly don't mean two hoots and happy land if your motivation is all wrong. And my motivation was all wrong. It's wrong. And so I just started doing whatever I wanted to do. Just about. No, that's not true. I started doing whatever I wanted to. There were things that I couldn't do because I wasn't able to. But the things that I could do, that I was able to do, I did those things. Now, I never stopped going out on them. See, because I knew what the answer was. I knew that no matter what, that you loved me. No matter how I acted, you loved me. No other place have I ever been where people love me simply because. That's what we do, is it not? We love each other when we don't deserve to be loved. You love us anyway. But I just did what I wanted to do. I spent money I didn't have. I went places I didn't need to go, some close to home, some across the country. I did stuff I didn't, you know, I got involved in some extremely sick relationships. And I kept it all hid, or I don't know if I kept it hid. None of y'all said anything to me. And quite frankly, if you suspected, don't tell me. I don't want to know that you suspected, okay? Because I know. But I just, I didn't care. Now, Bo didn't know I'm not trying to make this all about Bo. I'm just telling you what an integral part the man played in my life. Bo didn't know all the intimate details of all the activities that I was involved in, but he knew about all of them. And I should have been fired. He should have come to me and said, "Philip, if you don't straighten your butt out, I'm going to have to fire you." But he didn't do that. He loved me anyway. And I didn't deserve it. I did not deserve it. Well, let me tell you something. There was a point in my life, this comes to the most important question I was ever asked, what I was going to do with my heart. And there was a point in my life when I was young, when I took my heart and I gave it to God. And despite what I did and where I went and what my life was like, God loved me anyway. And He did for me what I couldn't do. I'd met this woman on the internet. She lived in Pennsylvania. And I went up to see her, spent the weekend with her. Came back home. I can't really describe to you what our relationship was like. Suffice it to say, we had some kind of a relationship with each other. Primarily, it was a friendship. The long and short of it is that she moved to Birmingham. And I told her, I said, "If you're moving down here for me, you're moving for the wrong reason." But she moved anyway. Thank you, God. God's looking after me, man. God's looking after me, buddy. And she lived down here about 3 years. And we did all kind of stuff. I'd go over there and help her put furniture together. I mean, this woman had been married 34 years to the same man. And after 34 years of marriage, he ran off with some other dude. Ran off with another woman. She had gotten married when she was 17 years old. She never lived by herself, ever, until she moved to Birmingham, Alabama. And the only poor soul that she knew was me. Can you imagine moving from nearly about Canada because she lived in Warren, Pennsylvania, which is about an hour and a half from Canada, all the way to Alabaster, Alabama. And the only person that she knew was me. That's pitiful. But I'd help her do things, you know, and she grew into a woman because she had to do it by herself. I could do a little bit, but I had no designs to marry her. I had no designs of having her, to date her, really, per se. But we liked each other, and we liked being around each other, and we enjoyed a lot of the same things, and we did a lot of stuff together. And one day, we were riding down the freeway, and I looked at her, and I said, "Robin, you love me?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, you know, I love you too. We ought to get married." And thank you, God, we got married. That's rough there for a while. Because I'm going to tell you, my motivation for marrying her was not all that great. I didn't have the best intentions. But yet she married me anyway. And it was rough there for a while. Because if I'm nothing else, I am selfish, self-centered, inconsiderate, dishonest, and fearful. I've just confessed to you my four-step inventory. Those are the exact nature of my wrongs. It's all of those things. And I was working for a company. I sell school bus parts. I pretty much suck at everything there is to suck at. I have absolutely zero, no talent. I mean, I can't sing, I can't dance, I'm not particularly mechanically inclined. I don't have a lot of talents. But I can sell school buses. And I work for, I've been selling school bus parts for a number of years. And I worked for this company, and they had bought the dealer. They had bought the dealership that I was working for. And I worked for them for 5 years. During that time, Robin and I got married. And December of 2012, we had a meeting in the warehouse. And they said, "We would like to introduce you to the new owners of this company." We had no idea. Well, the new owners and I had two things in common. I didn't like them, and they didn't like me. But they really didn't have any choice, because these people, they couldn't even spell a bus. So they really didn't have any choice but to hire me. But they didn't do it willingly. They did it because they had no other choice. And I worked for them about a month, which was just about 30 days too long. And as a matter of fact, my first day was the 2nd of January of 2013. And on my way to work that morning, I called the former mothership that I worked for over in Georgia, and I said, "If this don't work out, do you think you would have a place for me?" Now, they didn't say, "Yeah, we will have a place for you." But I could tell that they would have a place for me. And I tried. I tried to work for them. But it was clear that was not for me, that this was not going to work. So I called back over to the mothership, and I said, "Do you have a place for me?" They said yes. And in March of 2013, I moved to Georgia. Robin stayed here. She was finishing out her job. I lived in a hotel. Her and Ralph, King Ralph, my little dog, they stayed at the house in Alabaster. We put all our stuff in storage. And we moved over here. She moved over here in July. And me and her and Ralph stayed in a little hotel room from July to September. Now, if we were going to ever get divorced, that would be the time, because that hotel room, each day that went by, it shrunk. It got smaller and smaller. But while she was over there and I was in Georgia, I didn't really have anything to do except look for houses, go to meetings. If there was a meeting that I could go to, that I could drive to, that's where I went. I went to every meeting in that town. And none of them was worth going to. Hated all of them. They clearly had no idea what recovery was really all about. I say that facetiously. Then one day, it's on a Tuesday, I went to a speaker meeting. And I sat down, and this lady got up, and about three sentences in, that's my next home group. Because y'all know, I mean, if you've been in recovery, and if you're in steps, and you're in sponsorship, and you know, then you know when you find the right place. I didn't know where this meeting was. That was one of the few meetings I hadn't been to. I asked her where she went. She told me. From that day to this, that's been my home group. It was different than what I was used to. I'd been to Bessemer. I started May 4th. I just realized, I was thinking either yesterday or day before yesterday. It had to have been yesterday. May 4th, my birthday, my Alan birthday, just dawned on me. So anyway, from May 4th to the day I moved over here, I went to the Bessemer group. That's where I went. Every Wednesday night, 8 o'clock. So when I moved over here and I started going to Perry, it was different for me. But I kept going. I kept going. I'd stopped a good number, obviously, of my activities, extracurricular activities I was doing. I stopped a lot of those, and I got involved in my home group. Because Jan and I were talking earlier, that's good sponsorship right there. Not because I'm a great Al-Anon member, but because I had a good, solid sponsor that instilled in me principles that no matter what, I needed to do. Going to meetings and having a home group, having a sponsor, I had to have those. It really didn't matter what was going on in my life, how well or how poorly I was involved in this program as a whole. I had to have those three things, because without them, I would lose the wife that I had just gotten. I would lose the job that I had. I would lose the house that I had. I would lose everything that I had. I'd lose it all. And I know I would, because I'm incapable of running my own life. Incapable. And so, I forgot where I was at. Well, I started going to these meetings, and it was great. And then Bo got sick. And I remember when he called me and he told me. And I really just didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know. I don't want to embarrass him, but Scott did most of the heavy lifting because I was in Georgia. I was not capable. I came over here. I've spent a couple of weeks with him, different weeks with him to help him as he was dying, And he was my sponsor, but he was the best friend I ever had. I didn't care that he was some circuit speaker. That didn't matter to me. I didn't care that everybody and their brother knew who he was, you know. The only thing that meant to me was that people would look at me and say, well, Philip must be okay because he's got Bo as a sponsor. I wasn't resting on my laurels. I was resting on his. But then as he was going, you know, it was very, very painful. It was very painful. Well, I knew that I had to take some action. I knew there were some things that I needed to do to take care of my life, things that I hadn't been doing, and that I needed to get back where I belonged. Now, I didn't know how to do that. Now, you know, I hope that I've made it clear to you how much I love Bo. I loved him I cannot express to you what that man meant to me. But our relationship as a sponsor and a pigeon had changed over the years. You know, Bo was only capable of doing so much, and he had done everything that he knew for me. And I knew that, and he knew that. Now, we didn't say that to each other, but we knew that's what it was, and I knew that's what it was. And so I had told Bo, I said, Bo, I think I need to work the steps again. And I found a guy over here that said he would help me. Would it be okay if I did? He said, absolutely. Now, Bo didn't work the steps, you know, over and over and over again. And I won't get into all that. But for him to give me, quote, unquote, his blessing, that meant a lot to me. So I got in the steps with this guy, and we worked those steps again. And it brought a lot of freedom for me, and it began to change my life again. Of course it did. I mean, that's what the steps are designed to do. Actually, what the steps are designed to do is to establish or reestablish our relationship with God. And at that time, I had no relationship with God. When I was at my very best, I didn't really have. My relationship with God was not all it should be. So I began to work steps with him. And then, of course, Bo passed away, and I knew I had to have a sponsor. Well, I asked this dude if he would sponsor me. He said, yeah, I'll be glad to sponsor him. Now, he has like 35 years of sobriety in AA. And he sponsored me. But, you know, I wasn't replacing Bo, because I'm going to tell you, you ain't going to replace Bo. I mean, there's not another man that'll be another Bo. There's not one. Everything about him, there is nothing that can replace him. And I knew that, and that's not what I was trying to do, is replace Bo. But I knew more or less what I wanted in a sponsor, and he wasn't it. But quite frankly, you think the men are slim here. In Birmingham, we got tons of men. Comparatively speaking, where I live now, there ain't that many men, and the ones that are there, I mean, I don't know any other way to say it, and I don't mean this egotistical at all, but they're not people that I would want to sponsor me. So I knew I had to have a sponsor, so he agreed to sponsor me. Well, then one day, since COVID, I started working at home. That affords me a certain amount of freedom. A lot of my work, not all of it, but a lot of my work is done via email, so I don't have to talk on the phone that much. So I go through spurts. You know, I listen to country. I like the real thing. I don't like this crap that they got today, but So I'll listen to country, and then I'll listen to rock, then I'll listen to speakers, then I'll listen to gospel, the real gospel, you know, like the Happy Goodmans and, you know, real gospel. I like to listen to that. Y'all probably don't know who they are, but look them up. So anyway, or I'll watch movies. Well, I was in my listening to speakers phase. Well, this dude that I knew had spoke at the men's anniversary several years ago. We taped it. So I had that tape. I put it on MP3s, and so I was listening to him. Well, about halfway through that, it dawned on me, this is a man I need to ask to sponsor me. I mean, this is a man I need to ask to sponsor me. So I called him up. This was a man that had me out in the parking lot, said, we're going to have to kick you out of here because your anger is scaring these women. And I knew him before I knew Bo. He got 40 years sobriety. I said, Chuck, you don't have to answer me right now. I don't want you to jump to, you know, any quick decision. I said, but would you be willing to sponsor me? He said, I ain't got to pray about that. I said, I would love to sponsor you. Well, I went to the guy that was sponsoring him, and I talked to him about it. I told him what I was going to do, and he's perfectly cool with it. You know, I'll go to a big book study with him today. So all that was fine. So I asked Chuck to be my sponsor. Now, this happened right before Christmas, this past Christmas. I've been over there, as hard as it is to believe, I've been over in Georgia 8 years. It took 4 or 5 years before I was willing to stay there. But I'd been in Georgia for 8 years, and I'd been doing the same thing over there that I was doing over here. I was a fake and a liar. I was presenting to people something that I wasn't to make myself look good. That was wrong. But I knew it was wrong. So every year that went by while I was over there, particularly after I worked the steps with Richard, I was able to work through some of that, and I was able to, you know, to get my life back as good as I could in the direction that I needed to go. Now let me tell you what happened. This is what I want. If you don't hear anything else I say, this is what I want you to know. That the big book talks about something called morbid reflection. And let me tell you, I was eat up with morbid reflection. You know, we could be working out in the yard, and this wave of guilt and remorse would come over me. I could be at the grocery store and I would just shake my head when thoughts of the things that I had done came over me. Now, I had worked the steps. I had admitted those things to my sponsor. I had gone through the process as best I could of dealing with all of that crap that I had been experiencing all these years. But yet I could not shake this feeling of just shame and remorse, and I didn't know what to do. I just didn't know what to do. Well, I asked Chuck to be my sponsor December, 1st of December, end of November. I don't remember. But anyway, I came over to town because he lives in Birmingham. Came to Birmingham right before Christmas, and we met at the church And we sat in the in that room there, and we began to talk. And I told him, I said, "Chuck, man, I'm suffering because of this morbid reflection, and I don't know what to do." He said, "Well, let me ask you something. Have you accepted God's forgiveness?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, have you accepted God's forgiveness? I mean, I know you've asked Him for His forgiveness. I know you've done the work on the issues that you were dealing with. But have you accepted God's forgiveness? Have you forgiven yourself for what you've done? Have you admitted to someone else that you have not accepted His forgiveness?" I'm telling you, man, it was like they flipped on the floodlights. And I said, "No, you know what? I have never done that." And I said, "Chuck, I'm here today to tell you that I accept God's forgiveness. I believe that He's forgiven me, and I accept His forgiveness. And I accept, and I forgive myself for what I've done. Because I did the work. I did what I was supposed to do. So I need to let it go." So I said, "Yes, I forgive myself." And I said, "God, I accept Your forgiveness. And I want to tell You I forgive myself." Now let me tell you the first thing that happened as a result of that. I mean, I was set free. You hear me? I mean, it was like a veil. It wasn't a bright light that Bill Wilson experienced, but it was pretty doggone close. And I came home, and I sat Robin down, and I said, "Baby, I want to talk to you." I said, "You know how much I love you. And you know how hard I've tried to show that I love you." I said, "But the fact of the matter is, what I was doing was trying to make myself good enough for you. And I could never do that. I could never, it didn't matter what I did, I could not make myself good enough for you. And I wanted to be good enough for my wife." Now, she's not in Al-Anon. Won't go to Al-Anon. And quite frankly, I think that a lot of that's because of me. Because I put it above. You know, our sobriety, I'm going to use that in a corporate term, is the single most important thing. Because if we don't use that, if we don't take care of that, if we don't nurture that, then guess what's going to happen? We die. But if I sacrifice my family to make myself good, I'm going to die anyway. That's what I was doing. And I was dying. And I said, "Baby, I can't make myself good enough for you." I said, "The fact of the matter is that you're not really no better than me. And I'm no better than you. I said, we're two people that are equal. And I want to be able to look you in the eye and tell you I love you simply because I love you. I want to do things for you simply because I love you. No other reason. Not because I want you to get me something. I don't know if y'all are married, but you know, if you are, what's hers is hers and what's mine is hers. That's the way it is." So I would do things for her in the hopes that she would allow me to have or do something I wanted to have or do. But today I strive to do things for her because I love her for no other reason. No other reason than the fact that I just love her. And I do. I didn't start out loving her. God gave me a love for her. All of that happened because I came into a little room at Bessemer, Alabama on a Wednesday night with people I had no relationship with and that I had nothing in common with and that I didn't believe could help me. And my life changed. My life changed. And from that day to this, my love for Al-Anon has grown exponentially. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I love Al-Anon. I love everything about it. There are things in Al-Anon I don't like. Guess what? I love those too. I love AA. I love AA because you gave me a solution to a problem I didn't know I had. And that solution was numbered 1 through 12. And without that 1 through 12, guess where I would be? I can tell you where I wouldn't be. I wouldn't be here. And more than likely, I'll be 6 foot under or at best back in that nut house because that's where I belong, in a nut house, because I am stark raving crazy. Not because of what other people did or do, but because of what I did and because of what I do without this program. So I love Al-Anon. I'm going to tell you, I love it. Oh, man. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, there are a lot of things I want. Okay? There are a lot of things I want to do. I don't know if I'm going to get them, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to do them. But I know this much. When I get home on Monday, that night, I'm going to go to my home group. But more importantly, today, I'm going to put one foot in front of the other and do what I'm supposed to do today. I'm not going to get in my car and be apart from you. That's what I did when I come up here. I'd come up here. Y'all would be sitting up there, you know, and y'all would be, guess what I'd do? I'd get in my car and take off, be by myself. I don't want to be around you. But yet I wanted you to think that I did. Well, today, if I'm not here, because I got something I need to do. But I'm going to be here with you because this is where I belong today. This is where I want to be today. I want to be here with you. I don't care if I'm speaking or not. It had nothing to do with it. I want to be here with you because I love you. I don't even know some of you at all. Never seen some of you, but I love you. Man, I do. And for whatever reason, I know that you love me. You want to know what recovery is? That's what that is. You want to know how to get it? 1 through 12 with a sponsor who's done it. The isms, I sponsor myself, that will put me down in the hole. So anyway, I appreciate y'all letting me share. Thank you.